Hello, everyone, and very happy Wednesday. I keep thinking it's Thursday, and I don't know where that's coming from, but at least I didn't get so confused that I didn't show up. let me begin by playing a song, and the song that popped out at me is by Amy Grant, and it's called Here. Feels very, very quiet to me. but I guess I need to break that quiet, that silence with voice. So, we are here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And I am on page 8, starting with question number 15. This is in a section of the book that is called, Who Am I? And this is the question. How long should inquiry be practiced? And this is the answer. As long as there are impressions of objects in the mind, so long the inquiry, who am I, is required. As thoughts arise, they should be destroyed then and there in the very place of their origin through inquiry. If one resorted to contemplation of the self unintermittently until the self was gained, that alone would do. As long as there are enemies within the fortress, they will continue to sally forth. If they are destroyed as they emerge, the fortress will fall into our hands. So this reminds me of a little discussion we had last night during the Gentle Healing Group, as well as a discussion that we had last Wednesday night in the Michael Langford Study Group. And really, the idea was, as long as this body lives, to continue with the spiritual practice. And the reason for that is, you know, a significant number of thoughts could be seen through, could become completely benign. The mind could appear to merge fully into the heart and be destroyed, the mind meaning thoughts. Could appear to merge into the heart and be fully destroyed, when in fact, the mind has actually become dormant for a time. And there's enough thought left, you know, it kind of reminds me of a little seedling. It's like, you know, if you think of the ego as this huge bush, this huge thorny bush. And through spiritual practice, that bush has kind of been whacked away. And now there's just this tiny, tiny seedling left. Because it's so tiny, I mean, you can see so clearly, right? The bush is no longer blocking the vision. And there's this feeling that, you know, awakening has occurred. But actually, there's still a seedling left. And if spiritual practice is to stop, that seedling can begin to be watered. And it can grow into a new bush. And I wonder, you know, I don't know this for a fact, so I want to be very clear about that. But I wonder if this isn't something that has happened with some spiritual teachers. Because, you know, there have been spiritual teachers throughout history that have appeared to become enlightened, you know, truly awake. And they have become, of course, great teachers. But then it does seem like, as they move forward in this role as teacher, that the ego begins to come back. You know, maybe they become very interested in power. Maybe they become very interested in money. Maybe they become very interested in sexual relations with their followers. Maybe they become very interested in all of it. And I think a lot of people have really felt very confused by this. How can someone that is so enlightened at the same time be so egotistical? And maybe the answer is there was a seedling that was left. And because the thought was, you know, in whatever way, I have arrived, I am enlightened, the mind is dead, the spiritual practice was, you know, it kind of fell into the background, and there was this confidence in the self, which gave the seedling the ground to grow. So maybe, you know, I want to throw that out as a maybe. But, you know, I'm a pretty simple person. And as a pretty simple person, I like pretty simple instructions. And to me, the idea of just continuing spiritual practice until this body dies is a simple instruction. I'm not asked to judge for myself whether I'm awake or not, right? It's not like a continue spiritual practice until you're awake. If that was the guideline, continue spiritual practice until you're awake, then I would have to judge for myself whether I'm awake or not. But if the guideline is continue spiritual practice as long as the body lives, well, that's pretty easy to determine. That's a simple instruction. I also think that spiritual practice becomes more natural, more enjoyable, and even something that we just kind of naturally fall into as the ego is cleared out, as that bush is chopped down. So I don't think the instruction to continue spiritual practice for as long as the body lives, I don't think that instruction is anything that's difficult, because I think, you know, like I love now to close my eyes and sit and be still, right? I love now to pay enough attention to what I'm saying and what I'm doing to make sure I'm not falling into being, you know, into believing the ego, into coming from an egotistical point of view. Like, this isn't a burden. So there's nothing wrong with the idea of doing this for the rest of my life. Let me just answer this text. It's a little bit important. So let me tell her that I was planning to drive you there. I have a friend, I'll tell you about this in a moment. I was planning to drive you there. I have a friend that walks like Peace Pilgrim. You may have heard me talk about her last night. And yesterday I drove her to a certain point, and she was going to be walking east of Pueblo towards Kansas. And she got almost to the next town after Pueblo, which is called Boone, Colorado, and suddenly she felt to come back. And she texted me this morning, and she was right back here in Pueblo West again. She'd even gotten a ride and was all the way back in Pueblo West. And so we went out to breakfast this morning, her and me and Ken and Rebecca, and now she's staying at Ken and Rebecca's house tonight. And I asked her if she wanted me to get her a campsite tomorrow night in I think it's called, I don't know how to say it. It's either Bianca or Blanca, Colorado. And she just texted and said, well, that would be great, except I don't think I could walk there by tomorrow night. Like, I was planning to drive you there. So, yeah, I wanted to answer that. And then as soon as we finish teaching here, assuming she wants that campsite, I'll go and make the reservation, of course, before it's gone. So when we look at Ramana Maharshi again, now he's not saying for as long as the body lives. You know, his answer is a little different. How long should inquiry be practiced? As long as there are impressions of objects in the mind, so long the inquiry, who am I, is required. As thoughts arise, they should be destroyed then and there in the very place of their origin, through inquiry. If one resorted to contemplation of the self unintermittently until the self was gained, that alone would do. As long as there are enemies within the fortress, they will continue to sally forth. If they are destroyed as they emerge, the fortress will fall into our own hands. So instead of giving the instruction of as long as the body lives, he is really saying, you know, as long as there are impressions of objects within the mind, which we saw last week, is it means thoughts. As long as there are thoughts. So I'm just contemplating this for a moment. You know, I think that for me, I will go ahead and just stick with that instruction for as long as the body lives, and I don't have to get into judging whether there are thoughts or not. I think that maybe sometimes thoughts can happen that we don't even see as thoughts. You know, I mean, the ego is so deceiving, and we can be so lulled into not noticing things. And like I said, the instruction that as long as the body lives, that's pretty dang obvious. And I'm sure that if I just continue spiritual practice until as long as the body lives, then I also meet the requirement that Ramana Maharshi is putting forth as well, which is as long as there are thoughts, right? So that feels good to me for this lifetime. And of course, you all heard the answer, so you can make your own decisions. Question number 16, what is the nature of the self? What exists in truth is the self alone. What exists in truth is the self alone. The world, the individual soul, and God are appearances in it, like silver in mother of pearl. These three appear at the same time and disappear at the same time. The self is that where there is absolutely no I thought. That is called silence. The self itself is the world. The self itself is I. The self itself is God. All is Shiva, the self. So in the gentle healing group lately, I have been using a term in my tips, you know, over the last several weeks. And it's a term that I really did not use in that way until writing the gentle healing curriculum. So it seemed to come out, you know, in those tips of its own volition rather than mine. And the term is awareness, life, presence, kind of hyphenated. Awareness, life, presence is the term. And this morning, in my contemplation time, you know, this language just kind of came through as I was writing the gentle healing tips. And the language itself has never been contemplated by me. It's only been accepted as the language to use. But this morning, this language took on a new life in my contemplation time. So this morning, the word presence, in awareness, life, presence, the word presence stood out not as the ego necessarily, not as all of the thinking, because again, the thinking has no life of its own, right? But as presence that is conscious of something other than itself. Or at least has the ability to be conscious of, you know, like a world, conscious of thought, conscious of feelings, that awareness that is conscious of, able to be the watcher, right? We call it the watcher sometimes, or the observer. That specific awareness is the presence. The presence is the watcher. The presence is the observer. Some people would call this consciousness. And awareness life is that which precedes it. Some people might call it the absolute, the Father. And so awareness life, which comes first, through an extension of awareness life, presence exists. Therefore, presence is made up of awareness life. And then through the, I'm going to use the word projection now, through the projection of presence, which is made up of awareness life, all other things are made. Therefore, all other things are made up of awareness, life, presence. And of course, the way that we state this simply is, all that exists is God. All that is God. Or as Ramana is saying here, all is Shiva, the self, right? But let's go back and look at Ramana's answer, because Ramana is saying something else as well. What exists in truth is the self alone. The world, the individual soul, and God are appearances in it. That's interesting, isn't it? God is an appearance in it. The Tao Te Ching says the same thing. The Tao Te Ching refers to the Tao as being before God. Before God. So what is God? Well, you know, there are several answers to that question. You know, one answer is God is an idea, right? My idea of God and your idea of God can be different ideas. Therefore, it's absolutely true that truth, whether we call that the self or whether we call that the Tao or whether we call that the absolute, but whatever truth is, it has to be before an idea. So God as an idea comes after. Some people might also call God the creator of the universe. But as I mentioned a moment ago, awareness life, which is the absolute here, extends itself into presence, which is that consciousness, that ability for awareness to be aware of something it seems other than itself, right? To be aware of objects, to have a subject and an object, a watcher, and something to watch. So awareness life extends itself into presence. And then through the existence of presence, all other things are made. So, through the existence of presence, all other things are made. Through the projection of the watching, all other things are made. Some people then might use the word God there at the level of presence, because they equate God to the Creator, right? And awareness life is before presence. Presence is an extension of awareness life. Therefore, again, awareness life, or as Ramana is calling it, the self, comes before God. So whether you think of God as just an idea, or whether you think of God as the creator, awareness life comes first. Now, of course, if you place the word God with awareness life, well, then it doesn't. So again, it all depends on how you use that term. You know, if I say awareness life is God, then the statement that just wouldn't make sense. God came before God, right? Just wouldn't make sense. So again, God, it being just a word, can be placed anywhere. So awareness life extends itself into presence or consciousness, or the ability for a watcher and something to be watched. It's really the ability for manifestation to occur, kind of the canvas on which manifestation can be drawn. And then through the existence of presence, manifestation comes about, right? So again, Ramana Maharshi is saying, what exists in truth is the self alone. The world, the individual soul, and God are appearances in it, like silver and mother of pearl. These three appear at the same time and disappear at the same time. The self is that where there is absolutely no I thought. The self is that, where there is absolutely no I thought. That is called silence. So here, at least this is the sense that I get, and I give each and every one of you permission to disagree with me. Here he's using the term I thought, but I don't get the sense he's talking about the chatter. You know, like in English, we learn the word I. In Japanese, the word would be boku, right? Boku, you know. And I don't know any other languages, so I don't know what it is in any other language. But, you know, that I, as an English, you know, as an English-speaking person would say, and boku, as a Japanese man would say, actually, Japanese women have another term, but I've forgotten it. That wording, that language that we learn, I don't feel that's what he's referring to here as the I thought. I don't feel that he is saying when that language is gone, when you no longer think the word I feel the I thought is something more primal. The I thought is my identification with presence, not only as what I am, but as individual and cut off from everything else. So, you know, it's kind of that idea of my awareness or my presence. Like, I have one awareness, I have one presence, you have another awareness, another presence, Jamie has another awareness, another presence, right? It's that sense of this being me, not just the body, but the awareness, the presence. This is me, and everything else is not me. It's a sense rather than a thought, rather than a language thought. And so what Ramana Maharshi is saying is that we realize ourselves as the self when there is absolutely no I thought. Absolutely no sense that this presence is what I am, with everything else being something else. So we have a watcher, the presence, we have a watcher, and we have that being watched. As long as the presence feels like the watcher and that being watched is something else, then there is not awareness of the self. When the watcher merges into life awareness, and that sense of me as a watcher and something to be watched no longer exists, then I know myself as the self, life awareness. What exists in truth is the self alone. The world, the individual soul, and God are appearances in it. Like silver in mother of pearl, these three appear at the same time and disappear at the same time. The world, the individual soul, and God appear at the same time and disappear at the same time. The self is that where there is absolutely no I thought. That is called silence. And at the same time, because this almost seems to disagree unless you begin to have that intuitive sense of it, and at the same time, those are my words, not Ramana's, the self itself is the world. The self itself is I. The self itself is God. All is Shiva, the self. So So awareness life extends into presence. Through presence, all things are made. I like to use the Play-Doh example because it's so easy. You know, so if awareness life was actually Play-Doh, right? That Play-Doh extends into presence. Presence, again, being the capability of a watcher and a watched. The capability of manifestation. And then out of that capability, the Play-Doh is formed into objects and all things are made. But what happens as the watcher focuses outward and begins to identify with itself as the subject, as the watcher, and begins to disidentify with its creations, with manifestation, which that which has come from it, there's a sense of separateness. And as long as the watcher continues to focus outward on its creations, which include thoughts, feelings, the world, it forgets more and more and more that it is life awareness, presence. And it becomes more and more identified with a portion of its creation, the body, in the mind. It still, at some level, knows it's the watcher. That's why we say things like, I saw a deer. I am the watcher. The deer is what I saw, right? I saw a deer. I hear my text coming in, right? But the problem is the I becomes misplaced. Because I am looking out at thought and looking out at the body, but now becoming identified with it. Instead of seeing myself as life, awareness, presence, I now think I, the watcher, am this person, Regina. I still know I'm the watcher. But I think the watcher is somehow contained within this mind and body. So awakening is reversing that in a way. Awakening is looking back at the self, looking back, beginning to notice that what I am is presence. Noticing that I am aware of thought. I am aware of feelings. I am aware of sensations. I am aware of sounds. I'm not just aware of the outer world. It's not me, the body, mind, aware of the outer world. I am also aware of the inner world. I'm not the thought because I'm aware of the thought, right? And so the identity begins to shift back from body, mind to presence. To consciousness, to the watcher. And then as identity begins to shift back from body, mind to presence, I began to allow my attention to dwell there with presence. And this is called the doorway to the infinite. Because the truth is, what I am is one with my source, which is prior to presence, its life awareness. So you could call it, you could say the first awakening is awakening from the idea that I'm the body-mind to the realization that I am presence. But that is not yet total awakening. Total awakening is awakening from presence, which is still a created, to life awareness, which is the infinite, the ever-present. And yet, at the same time, everything is an extension of the ever-present, of life awareness. So at the same time, everything is God, or everything is Shiva, right? The only issue is that we don't know who we are. We think we're the body-mind. Or maybe we're beginning to see that we are presence, but even before that, there's a before that. But when we wake into before presence, when we wake into life awareness at the same time, I'm everything. It's not that I'm just life presence, right? That idea, or just life awareness, that idea that I'm just presence is the ego, is the individual soul. The realization that I'm life awareness is also the realization that I am everything. There are no limits to what I am. I think I've heard people talk about this as awakening back and then out. Right? You awaken back from the idea that you're the body, mind. And in fact, in my case, to be honest, it may be even more elementary, because as I'm listening to the Holy Spirit guides audios that are being played on Sunday night, which are reminding me of my own path because I have forgotten so much, what I'm hearing is that I actually awakened first from I'm a body to I'm a mind. And then it seemed once I got that, I'm a mind, I actually began the awakening process from I'm a mind to I am. I usually use the word awareness, but today I'm using the word presence. I'm presence. And then from presence is the awakening into the absolute. So again, it's kind of awakening back. And then once you've awakened to the absolute, there's the simultaneous realization, I am everything, and so that's the out. Back and out. And this, of course, is why we're always told to go inward, right? The kingdom of heaven is within. Because the process is a back and then an out. We aren't usually told, although some people do this, but it seems like most of the masters that I listen to, we aren't usually told to focus out and to think, oh, that is God, that is God, that is God. Because that's still happening with our identification of I'm the body-mind in place, right? So we awaken back first in order to break that identification. And then once we've broken that identification, we awaken out into I am everything. And again, to me, that's a simple instruction that tells me which way to focus my attention. It may be true that all things are God, but my attention is focused back. Within. Before. Even behind. All of these words feel appropriate to me. So again, what is the nature of the self? What exists in truth is the self alone. The world, the individual soul, and God are appearances in it. Like silver and mother of pearl, these three appear at the same time and disappear at the same time. The self is that where there is absolutely no I thought. That is called silence. The self itself is the world. The self itself is I. The self itself is God. All is Shiva, the self. So again, first you awaken back, and then you awaken out, right? Question number 17. Is not everything the work of God? Without desire, resolve, or effort, the sun rises. And in its mere presence, the sunstone emits fire, the lotus blooms, water evaporates, people perform their various functions and then rest. Just as in the presence of the magnet, the needle moves. It is by virtue of the mere presence of God that the souls governed by the three cosmic functions or the fivefold divine activity perform their actions and then rest in accordance with their respective karmas. God has no resolve. No karma attaches itself to him. This is like worldly actions not affecting the sun, or like the merits and demerits of the other four elements not affecting the all-pervading ether. And first of all, I would just want to say, goodness, 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 I'm so grateful that I have my own inner experience of what's being talked about here, because these words I would not understand at all. If I did not already know what was being pointed to, these words would not do it for me. But fortunately, I have already had my own inner experiences, my own inner realizations, and therefore I do understand what these words are pointing to. So let me see if I can break it down. I mentioned using the words life, awareness, presence, right? Life awareness is, Kathy says, that's why we're listening to you. Yeah. Life awareness is what we could call the absolute or the father or the source, right? And then presence. Presence is an extension of it. And presence, which is usually called consciousness, but it's interesting that in the guiding light language, the gentle healing language, the word presence was used. And I trust that has its own purpose, so we'll find out. But this is usually called consciousness. But presence or consciousness is an extension of life awareness, but just pardon words, but you know, it's like the capability for manifestation to occur. As I mentioned before, it's the canvas on which manifestation can be drawn or painted. Without a watcher, there can't be something that is watched, right? Without a seer, there can't be something that is seen. So this presence or this consciousness that has the ability to see, to witness, is a critical part of manifestation. And then manifestation itself comes out of that. In this particular answer, when Ramana Maharshi is using the word God, he is referring to what I am calling presence, or what is more frequently called consciousness. The watcher, the subject. And so the question is everything not the work of God? Right? And what Ramana Maharshi is explaining is that God, or presence, does nothing. But in its beingness, all things happen. He says, without desire. And again, if you look at presence, look at your own presence, not your mind, because your mind certainly has desires. Your mind certainly has ideas of, you know, what it wants to do today, what it doesn't want to do today, right? But if you look back before your mind to what I usually call awareness, right? To that consciousness, to that presence that is what you are prior to the mind. If you look at it, you'll notice it has no desire. It has no will. It makes no effort. And that's what Ramana Maharshi is saying here. Without desire, resolve, or effort, he's using the example of the sun. Without desire, resolve, or effort, the sun rises, and in its mere presence, the sunstone emits fire, the lotus blooms, water evaporates, people perform their various functions and then rest. Right? The sun doesn't do any of that. It all happens within the sun's light, but the sun does none of that. Just as in the presence of the magnet, the needle moves, right? The magnet doesn't make the needle move. The needle starts moving in the presence of the magnet. Just as in the presence of the magnet, the needle moves, it is by the virtue of the mere presence of God. That would be your presence, right? Your awareness, your consciousness. Just by the virtue that there is a watcher, it is by the virtue of the mere presence of God that the souls governed by the three cosmic functions or the fivefold divine activity, I'm sure this is from the Upanishads, perform their actions and then rest in accordance with their respective karmas. God has no resolve, no karma attaches itself to him. And you can see this again in your own presence, your own awareness, your own consciousness. It has no will. It also has no karma. The karma is attached to the body-mind, not the watcher, not the witness, not the awareness. God has no resolve. No karma attaches itself to him. This is like worldly actions not affecting the sun. Or like the merits and demerits of the other four elements not affecting the all-pervading ether. And you know, it's interesting because those of you who have studied or do study A Course in Miracles, you know that A Course in Miracles says God did not create the world. Another way to think of it, remember I said that presence is like the canvas. That, you know, the pictures can be drawn on. But does the canvas create the pictures? No, the canvas makes the pictures possible. If it wasn't for the canvas, there could be no pictures. But the canvas does not create the pictures. So consciousness, awareness, presence does not create the world. Yeah, it witnesses, it accepts, it allows. It reminds me also of in the Bible when it says love allows all things. Love in that case would be synonymous with presence or consciousness or awareness. But I mentioned earlier that it's often called the creator. And the reason it's called the creator is because without it, creation could not be. Right? Or it's called God sometimes. That's why I said before, I said it, presence is like the ability for form to now happen. Like if it wasn't for presence, you wouldn't have the ability for manifestation. Or you could say it's the possibility, you know, presence is the possibility for creation, right? I think canvas, or often another example that's used is the movie screen behind the movie. And again, what's really cool about all this is, you know, crap to the mind. It's like, whoa, I can't even think about this stuff. Blow my mind. But what's really cool about all this is that you can look and see that, you may not be able to see right away that your presence or your consciousness is the canvas on which form is placed, although you can get to where you see that. You may not be able to see that initially. But what you can see pretty quickly, pretty easily, is that your presence, your consciousness, your awareness has no will, has no desire, has no judgment. It merely is aware. It's merely open awareness, allowing all things to be. So you don't have to listen to Ramana Maharshi or anybody else and believe them. You can see it for yourself. And then it's through continuing to watch the watcher, continuing to place attention with presence, that you begin to really get the intuitive awareness that everything is on it or in it, you know, depending on whether we're using the symbol of like on a canvas or on a screen or in it, more like it's the infinite container that holds everything within it, right? These are all symbols that people use when they're trying to express it. But continuing to watch it, you begin to know this, see this. I was with a friend today who was talking about the experience that she has, which is a lovely experience, of being aware of the transmission of love between one being and another being, whether between, you know, her and another person or her and a dog, and being very, very aware of that transmission of love. And I think she asked me about my experience, you know, to see if it was the same, that I was really aware of this transmission of love. And I told her that I'm not. I'm not. But the reason that I'm not is because I no longer have that strong sense of a me and a you to transmit love between. There's more of a feeling of all of this, including the apparent me, of all of this inside of what I am. And what I am is love, so everything is within love and a part of love. Therefore, there's no transmission from one to another going on, right? It's like if we were molecules of water in water, right? You wouldn't say that we're transmitting water from one to the other. We are water and we're within water. And so water just is. Love just is. Right? And it is what I love about love, real love, is that it is, no matter what the appearance is. The appearance could be appearance of anger. And in the appearance of anger, the love that is may be forgotten. There may be no attention on the love that is, but the love that is still present. That's what I love about love. And so it isn't a transmission that could then be cut off because my mind cut it off because I judged you, right? This love is our presence. Our presence is love. I am love. You are love. And whatever the mind does within that, the mind could be hating. The body could be killing. And yet it's still happening within the presence that is love. I am love. You are love. And everything that happens, happens within our presence. Because we are the possibility for things to exist or appear to exist temporarily, right? So I'll read this answer again because we don't have enough time to go to the next answer. So let me just read this question, answer again, number 17. Is not everything the work of God? Again, is God working? That's how Ramana heard the question. Is God working? Is not everything the work of God? See, in the previous answer, everything is God. But everything is God and is everything the work of God are two different questions. You know, the mind that isn't overly discerning may not hear the difference, but there's a difference. Is it true that everything is God? Yes. Is it true that everything's the work of God? No. So is it true that God did not create the world? Yes. Then doesn't that mean that these things are something other than God, since he didn't do it? No. You see, the logic doesn't go that way. It is true that it is not the work of God, but it is God. It came, you know, it's all Plato. It's all Plato. It came from Plato. It's still Plato. So is not everything the work of God? Without desire, resolve, or effort, the sun rises. And in its mere presence, the sunstone emits fire. The lotus blooms. Water evaporates. People perform their various functions and then rest. Just as in the presence of the magnet, the needle moves, it is by virtue of the mere presence of God that the souls governed by the three cosmic functions or the fivefold divine activity perform their actions and then rest in accordance with their respective karmas. God has no resolve. No karma attaches itself to him. This is like worldly actions not affecting the sun. Or like the merits and demerits of the other four elements not affecting the all-pervading ether. Right? So that's it for today. So I'm marking question number 18. And that is where we will start next week. And thank you, everyone, for taking this journey with me. We're just moving right along. I think we've been doing this 10 weeks, and we're all the way up to next week we'll begin page 9. And that's kind of funny when you think about the fact that the very first page was actually, let me see if it was actually page 1 or if it started with, yeah, the very first page was page 3. So we start with page 3. Next week we begin page 9, and we've been doing this for 10 weeks. All right, y'all have a wonderful day.
All right. Thank you so much. Love. And I have